The Ashland Police Department decided to take a different approach to sexual assault cases a while back. APD introduced a program called You Have Options. The name alone lets victims know things will not be handled as they were in the past. You Have Options is the focus of a lot of attention across the country. Today's guests have made multiple presentations to groups in various places considering starting up similar programs. There are some obstacles to the program's implementation in places as well. Let's get an update on the whole situation. Two guests, both from the Ashland Police Department. Corey Falls is the deputy chief. Corey, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
And Detective Carrie Hull is the You Have Options program manager here in the studio with me as well. Carrie, welcome back.
Good morning.
So give us the general picture on how You Have Options got started, what the need was that you were trying to address here.
Sure. So late 2009, early 2010 in Ashland, we really identified a problem within our police department with the investigation of sexual assaults. And sort of just as a broad overview of that, what we found was that we weren't giving people an entry into that investigative process that was really identifying the barriers that they were facing. So the need for confidentiality, the fact that nobody really knows at the beginning or very closely after an incident happening what they want to do 6 months, a year later. So what we tried to do is change the traditional response that law enforcement had for sexual assault, specifically at the Ashland Police Department, to allow for those most common barriers. And really what we did is we just tried to give as many options as we could, not trying to make it specific to one victim or one type of victim, and just said, hey, here's these options. You can pick things that would work for you in your unique situation, and then we will work with you the whole time. So we really made it more of a partnership with a victim during the investigation than the traditional model allowed.
Corey Falls, prior to that, were most cases dealt with like a lot of other crimes, burglaries, robberies, whatever?
Sure. We had a traditional response when we were dealing with sexual assault victims. And it was nice as we got into our program to see the change that we did when in the information we changed, because we did identify prior to doing this that we weren't always getting the full story of what happened. And as we were investigating these crimes, we were thinking, why aren't we getting sometimes accurate information or the full story? And it was, we looked at our traditional response and we realized we need to beat down some of these barriers that are causing us not to get all the information. So it's been nice to see the change in things with our program.
So Detective Carrie Hull, what kinds of obstacles were the victims encountering? What sorts of things were preventing them from divulging what they'd been through?
I think one of the biggest was that our interviewing strategy for a victim was not conducive to the trauma that they had been through. So traditionally, when you speak with a law enforcement officer, there's the who, what, when, where, why, right? We didn't have the training at that time and the information to understand that a victim really can't be a witness to the assault. And so you really need to interview in a trauma-informed manner that allows for them to recall what they can and what they're able to about the incident without the expectation that they're going to be able to take you through from beginning to end and identify things that a witness might be able to of a criminal activity.
This sounds similar to the approach that's been taken in child sexual abuse cases, Children's Advocacy Center sorts of treatments where they take the child into a more therapeutic sort of environment rather than doing what had been done over the years under the fluorescent lights, on the hard chair, and all that sort of thing. So it's interesting that this has kind of started with child sexual assaults and moved up the age range.
Absolutely. So a lot of child forensic interview methods have been incorporated into something called the FETI, the Forensic Experiential Trauma Interview. That was pioneered and founded by Chief Russell Strand with the Army Criminal Investigations Division. And that has heavily influenced what we do in our program, as well as a trauma research by Dr. Rebecca Campbell, Dr. David Lisak. All of these researchers were really who we looked to when we built the program to try and identify a better way that we could do. Because the reality is, no matter how much you want to catch the bad guy and keep the community safe, which is, of course, the goal of law enforcement, that process can't start if we're not getting the information from those that were victimized.
Which raises a very important question then, because there are people thinking, well, okay, you're giving the victims time to get their stuff together and feel like they're ready to talk, but in the meantime, somebody could be out there still doing something. I'm sure you hear that question a lot.
Absolutely, and it's a very legitimate concern. However, I think it's a traditional concern, not understanding the dynamics of these cases. So if you focus on, okay, we're going to push this this one person through so that we can catch this one perpetrator and all feel better about ourselves. What you've done now is ignored, right, potentially the hundreds of others that you needed to engage in the process to actually do something to keep the community safer. So sexual predators rely on keeping their victims silent. They also rely on choosing people who may appear to lack credibility, who may be particularly vulnerable, that are less likely to be believed by law enforcement if they come forward. So by addressing those issues and really giving victims an option to come forward in a way where we aren't, basing decisions based on their apparent lack of credibility, and we're making them feel less vulnerable during the process, we're really getting more information to hold perpetrators accountable.
And we're understanding, too, with we're getting information that we otherwise wouldn't have gotten. So because sexual assault and through our research with sexual assault, it's so underreported, we wouldn't have gotten the information that we are now getting to begin with. So we're glad just to be start by getting that more information.
So in a sense, by having softer hands to receive the information, you're going to get more information, mm-hmm. you're saying.
Yeah, and I think it really does help to change the point of view. So traditionally, society as a whole has sort of said to victims, how dare you not come forward and give me the information that will help me keep my family safe, right? I think we need to shift to, thank you so much for coming forward and giving what you can. And that's a completely different mindset, but it really is the right thing to do. It also allows us to actually gather information.
Detective Carrie Hull is the program manager for the You Have Options program at the Ashland Police Department. Corey Falls is the deputy chief. We can take your phone calls if you'd like to ask him questions or make some comments about the You Have Options program at the APD. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. I do want to make sure we understand what happens in a lot of sexual assault cases, though, because, Carrie, you mentioned sexual predators. I mean, are most cases involving sexual predators, or are most of these actual acquaintance situations where the people know each other well?
Well, I consider all of those, even if they are acquaintances, predators. So if they are inflicting an assault on another person, oftentimes what we have found is they are a serial sexual offender. So it is research supported that many of these offenses are committed time and time again by the same perpetrator. So I always like to tell people, it doesn't mean that we have this huge amount of people perpetrating sexual assaults. What we tend to have is a small number perpetrating a lot of sexual assaults, which also is why the program is so efficient. So if we can get more of those victims telling us about the same person, we have a much better chance of holding that person accountable, which really goes a long way towards keeping a community safe, because if you remove one from the community, you're removing somebody that's perpetrating a lot of crimes.
So generally, it's not, I mean, it may be a case where people got together, they knew each other, there was alcohol mm-hmm. involved, but if somebody has committed a sexual assault, they've generally done it before and will do it again?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and again, this is definitely a generalized statement, but it is research supported. We have found it in our investigations. You can even think from a common sense standpoint, if somebody's willing to do this once, why would we think that they wake up the second day and say, you know, that's something I'm never going to do again? It happens, but we do find that this is repeated over and over. And we do find that victims will come in and tell us and give us the same name as somebody that's already been reported on.
Corey Falls, why is this so important in Ashland? Why, of all places, Ashland, Oregon?
Well, it's interesting how this program got started is we just wanted to identify a way to do a better job and within our organization. There was no aspirations of this going any farther than our detective division. And how can we do better for the victims in our community? How can we be a better detective division is what I was looking at as a commander of the division. How can we do a better job? And what I love about this program is and the great job Carrie has done is we knew we had to do something different, something better. Carrie started doing all this research and started talking to victims and said, why don't we do this? And with our leadership style within our organization, we said, yeah, if we think this is going to make our detective division better, our police department better, our city better, then let's do it. And we move forward, and it's really grown now.
Ashland is a college town, though. Is that one of the major drivers yes. here, though, in sexual assaults within this community?
Yes, and it was something that we certainly identified within our detective division, sexual assault being within the city of Ashland our worst person's crime. And we wanted to be able to combat our worst person's crime within our city the best we could. And when we started looking at what we could do, this program came out of that.
Was there a template, Carrie Hall? I mean, were you able to look at somebody else's program and go, oh, I'll just slap a new name on it? Or did you put this all together yourself?
I really wish there had been a template. We had spent a lot of time searching for one. Initially, I kept saying to myself, wow, this has to be available somewhere. Someone must be doing something. We really, and I'm not saying it doesn't exist somewhere, and I always tell people, boy, if you hear somebody else doing this, let us know, because we want to talk to them and see if we can make ours better. What we have found, unfortunately, is that while there has been huge strides in some law enforcement agencies to address crimes like domestic violence, DUII, unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of specific time spent on sexual assault as to why the traditional methods weren't working. Now, where the time was spent was with researchers and with advocacy, but unfortunately, those relationships weren't really with law enforcement. So I did find actually very easy, once I reached out, people were very receptive and wanted to give us this information, particularly Dr. David Lisak, who goes around the country and speaks to agencies all over. He told me specifically, he said, wow, this is amazing. I go all over and speak to large police departments and universities, and they keep telling me this isn't possible. And so I think what the You Have Options program has done is it no longer allows people to say it's not possible. We've shown that there are ways to do it. Now, this is a huge departure for law enforcement because we give a lot of investigative control to somebody other than the police officer. That is not to say they tell us how to do the investigation, but they can tell us who not to talk to. And I think that that makes law enforcement officers nervous. But we have shown over the years that it is possible to do that and still build a really great case that a district attorney can move forward with.
Corey Falls, how hard was it to let go of that?
Well, it's tough. And one reason why there wasn't a law enforcement template is our goal was to increase reporting. Who wants to go to their community, their city council, their police chief, and say, chief or city council, we're gonna increase reporting of sexual assaults in our community, and let me tell you why that's a good thing. So that's why when we looked around at this, there's not going to be a lot of templates out there as to wanting to increase reporting. But we know that if we increase reporting, we're going to identify more serial perpetrators. We identify more serial perpetrators, we'll be able to hold more of them accountable, and ultimately, we hold more people accountable, we start reducing this problem.
Is it like the way it's portrayed in a lot of TV dramas, or you just want to clear the cases? Is that the usual impulse in law enforcement? You want to get this thing taken care of in a hurry, get the guy behind bars, et cetera?
Sure, and we've seen it. You know, we've seen it from the days of Dragnet. Just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And it is, and certainly historically and traditionally in law enforcement, when someone reports to me, do you want to be a victim or not? Because if you don't want to be a victim, I have other things to do. I'm going to move on. So, and that is a lot of times has become the standard when you're getting reported in a variety of crimes. The first question an officer will ask is, do you want to be a victim to this? Well, no, I just want you to know. All right, thank you. And you move on. Well, we found, especially with sexual assault dynamics, that it's not that they don't want to be a victim, but if you give them these options and you lay out a program that we have where they're comfortable to come forward and tell us with the interviewing strategies that Carrie's talking about, we'll get that information eventually, but it's just on their time. So we're just not shutting that door right from the beginning if they don't want to be a victim. It's like, okay, when you're ready to tell us, we're ready to listen. And it's that change in our response to victims.
The sexual assault program of the Ashland Police is called You Have Options. Corey Falls is the deputy chief. Detective Carrie Hall is the program manager. You can join us on the exchange with questions or comments at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Carrie Hall, walk us through this because, I mean, you mentioned that it's tough for law enforcement people to give up control of the contact with the victim. So who controls and what are the steps that the person goes through when they first say, hey, look, I had this thing happen?
Sure. So the first thing we try and do is see if they would be comfortable talking to a sexual assault advocate. And we have a really great relationship with sexual assault advocacy. And the reason we do that is they're not a systems-based, they're not part of the police department, and everything that victim tells an advocate is 100% confidential. We actually want that. So traditionally, law enforcement has not been the one to offer that. What we like about it is they can offer those victims the program options, which include they can just do an information-only report. So nobody is listed as a suspect. It's just here's what happened to me. This is all the information I'm able to give at this point. And then we can preserve that information. What that helps is that we are able to start that reporting process, hopefully gather, you know, maybe parts of evidence that would have otherwise been lost if we didn't give them that option to just pause the investigation. And then we also are still gathering information about that potential perpetrator. So nothing may be corroborated yet, but it's like a tip, right? Every police department has tip lines. It's like someone calling in with a tip, while still really being and acknowledging where that survivor is at that point. Because really, if this had just happened to you, how do you know what you're going to be willing to do later? Or you can do a partial investigation where they come in and maybe we do talk to some witnesses, maybe we do gather more evidence than otherwise we would, or they can just say, I want to do the whole thing, and we're in a traditional, complete investigative model while still using the trauma-informed interviewing techniques.
So are there numbers then to show the success of the program? Is it something that can be measured successfully with numbers? Is it, you talked about Quarry Falls, about going to the city council and say, we're going to increase your sexual assault reporting.
Yes, we have seen a significant increase in people reporting. I think it's
106%. Yeah. So 2009 was what we call our zero year, when we weren't doing any of these things that we're talking about. In 2010, we started the process. It took me about 3 years to, we talked to every victim that I could that was willing to talk to me, talk to researchers, formulate the program, formalize it. And then in 2013, we went forward with a formal program at that point, which really was the website that was launched in January. And so at the end of 2013, we'd gone up 106%, which was way more than we thought. We had estimated maybe 30% we thought we would be really ecstatic with.
Really? So yes. You got like three times the boost you thought
right.
You'd get.
That's...
Yeah, we had to redo the numbers about six times because we didn't believe it.
Yeah. Ran through them again and said, okay, this is for real. These have to be complicated cases, obviously. Are there differences in law from state to state, as you have other departments asking for information about this? I mean, is something that would be sexual assault in Oregon not necessarily sexual assault in another state?
Yeah, and so the national program, which we'll be launching this year in October, October is our first train the trainer session for other law enforcement agencies. And we've had surprisingly large number of agencies that have indicated they would like to join the program across the nation. And so the 20 elements of the program, and if anyone is interested as to what those are, you can go to reportingoptions.org. There's a link on the homepage for the site that law enforcement agencies can join. We've left that public for everybody because everybody has a right to see what these agencies would be doing. And those 20 elements are very clearly outlined on there. So all of those elements are not statute specific for cases. They are all elements that can morph depending on how your individual state statutes work.
Is it as simple as what began as consensual sex, if the consent is withdrawn? I mean, is that consistently sexual assault state by state by state?
It depends. So like Oregon has what's called forcible compulsion. So we have to be able to show forcible compulsion. Again, we tell people broadly because we don't want victims trying to define whether or not their experience was sexual assault or not without really having a chance to talk to a law enforcement officer who can help make the determination based on very specific individual facts. So what we say is... a sexual assault can occur when there was, of course, a no, okay, when there's non-consent, but there can also be sexual assault when the option for no was not in existence. So, you know, I always give the example, a domestic violence situation where somebody has just, you know, physically abused their spouse and then says, hey, I really want to make it up to you, let's have sex. That's a very coercive environment because what's going to happen to that person if they say no? So again, we don't want to put limits on what is this and what isn't. We really want people to get to a place where they can discuss those options, be it with an advocate, be it with a law enforcement officer, and then determine on their individual situation, does it meet the criminal statute for that state?
Wow. That takes some really careful interviewing, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Let's talk about the fact that I understand some college campuses have contacted you and asked for help in setting up something like You Have Options, mm-hmm. and there have been some issues there.
There have. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, we've had actually at this point, I said a month ago, 40. I would probably double that at this point, which is pretty amazing, that really want to offer these type of options to survivors within the college environment. What I can say, and I'm not just saying this because we're sitting on Southern Oregon University's campus, they do this amazingly well here. So they have one of the people that helped us develop the program, Angela Fleischer, is actually a confidential person within the student conduct office here at SOU. So people can go to her. There's just one of three on campus and get these options very similar before they initiate the student conduct administrative process on campus. So we've used that as a template for other universities that are looking to adopt this. There is law enforcement agencies within college campuses that are mandatory reporters, responsible persons is what they're called under Title IX. And so that is a good thing. Title IX was trying to do things to help with sex discrimination in the educational environment. So we aren't saying that, you know, that is a bad thing. We think Title IX is a bad thing. It does make confidentiality very hard, depending on how that survivor reports and who they report to. So our answer has been at this time, you can definitely take any of the elements of the You Have Options program and use them as they fit on your campus. We have seen campuses that have said, hey, I can do 1 through 12, but I can't do the other ones because of Title IX. And so they're implementing trauma-informed interviewing. This is a huge win for survivors on campus. We recommended to offer recording of those interviews that victims do with their administrative process and then give the victim a copy of that recording, because we've seen that victims later say, I was asked all these really inappropriate things, or I wasn't given my options. The idea is to empower survivors to come forward, whether it's in the criminal justice process or the administrative process.
You mentioned that there's going to be training the trainers in October, and I noticed that there is a 2014 Southern Oregon Sexual Assault Symposium coming up in October. Is that what you're talking about?
So there are two different events in the same week. So. So the Train the Trainer is law enforcement specific. That's for agencies that are looking to join the program. They are required to go through a Train the Trainer model. That's Monday through Wednesday, October 13th through the 15th. And then the symposium, the Southern Oregon Sexual Assault Symposium, is Thursday and Friday of the same week, the 16th and 17th.
17th. A lot happening in the world on this, so congratulations with the success of You Have Options. We'll talk to you again down the road and see how things are going. Corey Falls is the deputy chief.
Thank you.
Carrie Hull, detective and creator of the You Have Options program. She's the program manager for the Ashland Police. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That'll do it for this hour of The Exchange. We'll talk about the potential pot law that Oregon will be voting on in November in hour number two. Please stay tuned.